Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 9. Almaty is the largest city in Kazakhstan, but it is still a very close, albeit international, community. Kazakhs have a sort of Chinese look to the face and dark hair. Most of the community is made of Germans who were exiled to the Soviet Union during the World War. Everyone speaks Russian, and most of the younger generation speaks English. Working for FedEx is a long schedule, with the delivery trucks loaded and ready for routes at 7 a.m. The route lasts as long as it lasts, depending on the number of packages and the number of addresses for each route. As one might expect, the workload is seasonal. Saturday night belongs to the employee, because there is no Sunday delivery. "Sasha, would you like to go for some drinks and dinner?" Boris asked his wife. "I would love to go with you," she replied as she closed the last drawer of the week's laundry. "Let me call a cab for 7 o'clock. That way we can both celebrate for a while," said Boris. "That will be fine. I need to take a shower, okay?" she said. "Perfect. Do you know where my black loafers are? I picked them up from the shoe repair yesterday. I think they did a good job this time. They look new. They're in the closet, still in the paper bag," she said as she slipped off her dress. Her Ukrainian frame was nearly ageless, as they never had any children. She was truly a beauty to behold. There were two things that a young man hoped for growing up in the Soviet Union: a man's official title in the vast bureaucracy of the greatest nation in the world was a lifetime achievement. No one wanted to be the deputy director of paper towels. Boris was not in the military, so he didn't have to wear a uniform with a broad green hat. He was the chief budget manager for the Energy Bureau, that gave him power over more than 10 million rubles of government purchasing. He was regularly lavished with gifts and business dinners by different state companies who wanted to do business with the greatest defense and space programs in the world. It was at these functions that Boris's second greatest treasure, his beautiful bride, was at his side. She was gracious and intelligent in her sensible and sincere compliments to their many hosts throughout Boris's career. Boris had a small portion of their closet where his crisp FedEx uniforms hung. He owned a few pairs of jeans and slacks, but the rest of the closet was filled with dresses and perhaps 100 boxes of shoes of all kinds of colors to match the dresses Sasha wore for more than 20 years of business functions. She could still wear her wedding dress from when she was 19 years old. He walked and lifted every day now, so he was perhaps in the best shape of his life. Tonight he would take his bride to dinner, and they would drink beluga vodka and perhaps find a place to dance and meet old friends. He picked up the brown paper bag and pulled out his black loafers. This was the second time he had them resold. There was no brand name on them because he had them custom made in the old days. The leather was the finest money could buy, and they caressed his feet like gentle hands. The shop had polished them, and the heels were perfectly attached without a scratch on the new leather sole, carefully stitched and trimmed around the supple upper portion of the shoe. They had even replaced the laces. He set them on the floor by the door and walked to the kitchen. He shook a little extra food into the cat's bowl and poured him fresh water. They might get up late tomorrow, and he wanted to make sure his best friend had enough and to spare, just in case. The cat rubbed against his leg and purred in approval. "There you go, kitty," he said in a voice that the cat seemed to recognize. "You be good, and make sure to use the box. No surprises when we get back. I know some unpleasant places for cats that poop on the floor." He heard the blow-dryer and knew that his sweet-smelling Sasha would be ready soon. He texted the taxi company for a 7 p.m. pickup and noticed the quick acknowledgement vibrate his phone. He wondered for a second about what they did in the old days to get a cab to pick them up. Service was quick and reliable now that there was competition in the market and Uber had come to town. Of course, no one minded if you drove a car while too drunk to safely walk in the old days. His job now depended on an absolutely flawless driving record, and there were a dozen men waiting to take his place. Independence changed things for sure, but mostly he felt good about the changes. "So where are you taking me tonight, my Russian tiger?" asked Sasha as she turned around for him to complete the zipping of her dress. "I have reservations at Tinkoff's near the top floor with the view of the mountains, downtown," he said as he followed the zipper up to her smooth neck, with her still moist dark brown hair perfectly shaped, spilling over her right shoulder. He kissed her neck and wrapped his solid arms around her. "Are you sure you want to go out tonight?" she asked playfully. "For my queen, only the best, and we can sleep tomorrow," he said, releasing her. She turned around, letting the tiny pleats of her knee-length dress flare out, and put her hands on either side of her face. She moved in close for another hug. He held her shoulders and kissed her forehead. "Let's go. The cab will be here in less than 2 minutes." The FedEx driver in him was constantly running a precise clock to make sure his delivery schedule always matched the previous day. The company rewarded him for staying within certain limits, which he adhered to better than any other driver. Sasha grabbed a stylish wool wrap from the closet by the door and handed Boris his short jacket. It would only be cool tonight, and he was impervious to the Kazakh cold. They walked down the stairs between their apartment and the other one in the building. They lived above two garages. Boris did not own a car, so he rented out his garage to some kids who stored their project car. It was extra money for things like this. "Who needs a car in the city of apples?" he would say every time Sasha would mention buying one. The taxi pulled up almost as soon as they reached the sidewalk, and he opened the door for Sasha to climb in. He was proud of his flexibility as he stooped to slide in next to her and close the door. "Tinkoff, please," said Boris. It was a good nightclub with dancing. The other type of place in Almaty is a dance club, but they are noisy and attract young and rowdy kids. He wanted to be able to talk to Sasha without yelling, and tonight they had a piano singer. It might be more laid back. If not, they could make a speedy getaway after dinner and partake of the fine cognac in the cabinet. Saturday night is busy in Almaty at this time of year. Everyone works hard, and there were really no free rides in this country. Founded by German exiles before the war, they had a very strong work ethic. Perhaps that is why the Soviet Union entrusted their most aggressive technologies to the world-class machine shops and fabricators here. The cab pulled up. Boris handed him 3 500-ruble notes. "Thank you for a quick ride," he said. "If you come back quickly when I text around 10:30, I would be pleased to ride with you again." The cab driver smiled broadly and nodded. It was a good tip, and he would remember Boris. "Shall we?" asked Sasha as she held out her perfectly shaped hand for him to lead her out of the back seat. "We shall," he said with a smile. The street side was bustling with shoppers and people looking for the perfect place to drink, watch sports, or listen to music for the evening. It was Friday morning in the U.S., so there wouldn't be any live games, but he wasn't out to watch TV anyway. They stayed close to each other as they made their way through the ground floor shopping lobby to the elevator. There was another couple waiting for it already, so Boris and Sasha stood in silence holding hands. Within seconds, the elevator arrived. 2 young women came out, and the 4 of them entered while the doors closed. "Third floor, please," said Boris to the tall man next to his date. "Vy говорите по-английски?" asked Boris of the man to see if he spoke English. "Yes, I speak English," said the man in English. "Ah, good. This is my wife, Sasha," introduced Boris. He could tell the man was Kazakh by the hint of Asian features in the man's face. By the cut of his hair and the sound of his voice, he had been educated in the U.S. "Pleased to meet you," he said, carefully holding Sasha's right hand in between his thumb and first 3 fingers lightly. Boris noticed they were going to the 4th floor, which was a bar with an open roof to the stars. It would be chilly tonight, but maybe they would have some gas heaters or something. Neither of them was wearing a jacket. The doors opened, and Boris and Sasha walked out and toward the hostess podium. He noticed 2 girls standing in black dresses that fit their trim bodies smoothly. They were not tight, like they were two sizes too small. So many young people did that these days. They were tastefully trimmed low in the neck and had a slit up the right side about to the knee. One was very blonde, and the other had waist-length jet black hair. Both looked European, perhaps Crimean. "Two people tonight?" asked the one with the dark hair through her perfect lips adorned with a flat red lipstick and with a small diamond pin sticking through her left nostril. "Reservations for Domashev," said Boris in his bureaucratic voice, but in English. "Yes, sir. Please follow Lorna, and she will take you to your table. Enjoy your evening," she said. Lorna, he thought. Not Crimean. Scottish, perhaps. "Here you are. Your waitress will be with you in a minute." "Enjoy," said the blonde waitress as she placed the menus on the high table next to the plate glass window overlooking the city with the mountains in the distance. Boris held out a chair, and Sasha slid into the black leather seat and crossed her lean legs. "Nice, isn't it?" asked Boris. "Boris, it's perfect. What a nice view," said Sasha. She knew better than to use her entertainment voice with him. Her closet was a reminder of just how rewarding it was to be the perfect wife at state functions. She could compliment men who were tyrants and make them think that they had just done something romantic and wonderful. Mostly, they never saw her coming. But Boris was an expert at reading people, and he was brilliant at names. To have that title at such a young age was really unheard of, and she was his wife. "I would give you the world if I could," he said. "You have given me the world, my husband," she said with her eyes moistening slightly. She reached across the small table with her hands, which he covered with his. He locked his thumbs over hers and caressed the top of her hands. "Good evening, sir. My name is Anna, and I will be taking care of you tonight. Can I get you started with something to drink?" asked the lean waitress, also in a black dress, but with a much shorter hemline. She had a Russian accent over her English. "Yes, a small plate and a pint of beluga, please," said Boris. It was a typical Russian appetizer with small pieces of very spicy meat like pork or beef. It was not hot to the taste, but rather prepared to have a strong odor of sage. "Yes, sir. And water as well?" it was polite to ask. "Yes, but sparkling, please," said Boris. "I'll be right back for your order," she said with excellent Russian efficiency. She was muscular and flexible when she walked toward the kitchen. It was clear to Boris that this was a second job for her. He guessed from the lack of long manicured nails on her hands that she worked in a local factory during the day. The fact she was not wearing a ring might also have meant she was saving for something. Many young people like her were working hard enough to save enough money to escape Almaty. Perhaps they wanted to go to Europe or to the U.S. The process for a visa was expensive and time-consuming for those places, and a work visa or a green card was next to impossible, unless you had a very good bribe for the consulate. Some things never change. I know the owner of this place," said Boris. "You do?" asked Sasha. "Well, I didn't know I knew him until the other day when I made some deliveries here. It was early in my route, so they weren't open for business yet, but I met the owner. He's from the Bureau of Energy. His name is Yevgeny. He was an accountant. Smart guy," he said, raising his voice slightly as the musician had arrived and was testing his sound. The meal was perfect, and the pint of beluga was the perfect touch. The German singer was flawless and even took a few requests from the audience. He could play anything from Mozart to Metallica with perfection. For the first time in the evening, Boris took his eyes off Sasha and looked around the club. There were large screens high up on the walls around the place. Some had horse racing, and others had golf. Some had a live picture of the singer from a camera in front of the piano microphone. He looked at the people out that night and wondered where they came from. Then he noticed someone he'd seen before. There, in a corner, sitting at a high table, was the stunning receptionist he had seen at the sports equipment company. There was no mistake. The tennis bracelets sparkled in the spotlighting hung from the rack above the tables. Tiny shards of light danced through the haze of the atmosphere, starting at her wrist. She was sitting with a man who was perfectly dressed in a tall wool suit with a dark tie and white shirt. It was buttoned and trimmed to fit his athletic frame. It was then that his heart skipped a beat. Standing next to him, with a bottled beer in his hand, was the young man with the tattoo on the left side of his face. And sure enough, the man was wearing a white smock that accepted the shipment, came walking up with two mixed drinks in his hands. He handed one to the woman with the tennis bracelet, and she smiled at him. It was clear to him that these people knew each other. "That is very strange," he thought almost out loud. "Why would someone receiving custom fiber optic cables know someone in the sporting equipment business?" My ass, no sporting equipment needs fiber optics. Boris did not wear a watch, but he could tell it was nearing 10:30. They had finished their light meal, laughed, and even sung with the music a couple of times. The Beluga was deliciously comfortable, and Boris called for the check. The place would be open until 4 a.m., but Boris had other delicious plans for this night. They rode the elevator alone down to the street level. When the doors opened, the volume of voices was disturbing. They walked out of the elevator and into the shopping lobby, heading for the sidewalk and the cab Boris had texted. The crowd was being pushed by something. There were men yelling and women letting out short shrieks like a mouse was loose or something. Women always panic when drunk men are fighting over something, thought Boris. He put his arm around Sasha and they headed for the door around the crowd. Within a few steps, the commotion collapsed against them, pushing them both into a freestanding display case with bottles of perfume. It went crashing to the floor and Sasha let out a scream. They just wanted to go home. The glass shelves made a sound like a car crash, and the crowd opened up to them. Standing there, checking themselves for cuts or broken glass on their clothes, Boris was ready to apologize to someone. "Old man, what do you have there?" said a dark man with a loud voice and a full black beard looking directly at Sasha. "Nothing for you, Daesh," said Boris with his best Russian accent on the English with which this thug had addressed him. It was an insult to use this word for Middle Eastern people in a community that had become increasingly Islamic in recent years. They pushed the limits everywhere they went. They sealed off portions of Almaty from non-Muslims about 3 years ago. FedEx stopped delivering there. It was dangerous for locals to walk there any time of day, but everyone kept their distance. Usually, there was no conflict, but this was different. They were here, in the nightlife. They were here, at Tinkoff. They were looking at Boris. "I think you do, my friend," said the man, and the crowd got quiet for a second. Boris placed his wife behind him, and he squared off with his hands by his side. Adrenaline flooded his body, but his mind stayed sharp and empowered by the more than half a pint of vodka he had consumed over the last 3 hours. "You could make a good decision here," said Boris with steel in his voice. "Or not." "Yes. Well, you are not being very polite to me, Russian." "You must introduce me to your beautiful woman," said the man as he approached the two. The crowd began to thin quickly. Some were holding their phones up as if to film what was about to happen. Some were calling the police. Whatever was going to happen now. It was often said that you could plant an apple tree and call the Almaty police, and it was a chance to see which bore fruit first. "My wife does not meet such as you. It is time for you to leave this place," said Boris. He checked his hands to make sure they were not balled into a fist. That would be provocative. He was never in the military, but he was very familiar with how to defend himself against one person. The fact that there looked to be 5 or 6 of them didn't worry him right now. Right now, he was ready for one pair of black eyes. "You understand nothing," said the man as he lunged for Boris. His feet were not well planted, as he was still standing on a tile floor covered in broken glass and perfume bottles. Still, he handled a two-wheeled cart not much lighter than this man. He swept his arm to the side behind him, carefully moving his wife to safety. He reached for the man's face and stuck his thumb into the side of his mouth, gripped the side of his face with strong fingers, and threw the man's face hard into the glass-covered floor, so hard that his feet came up in the air. The crowd was pressing now. He looked up to see a dozen phone lights, all filming. He reached back for his wife, who grabbed his hand. They quickly walked through the crowd that appeared to be opening a safe way to the sidewalk outside. The other Middle Eastern-appearing men ran to their loud partner, who would need an evening with a needle and thread. There was blood splattered all over the glass and the floor as the man got to his feet. He was holding his forehead, but there were four dark bruises on his cheek and blood coating his lips as well. "Go back to where you came from," said Boris coldly, as they exited the building into the crowded street. He could feel pats on his back, but he heard nothing anyone said as he made his way to the taxi stop. He could feel his heart pounding in his head. He looked down the street, but it was choked with cars and bright headlights. There was no taxi in sight. He checked his right hand to make sure it was not injured. He held it up to the light, but there was only a slight coating of blood on his thumb where he had bloodied the man's mouth on the inside. "Boris, are you all right?" cried Sasha. Her beautiful eyes were crying, although her creamy skin required no makeup. The mascara was dark on top of her cheeks. "Yes, I'm fine," he said as he took a deep breath and tried to shake off the adrenaline crash. "I don't get it. What was that?" she said, nearly sobbing now. "Muslims. They are trouble, even here in Almaty. We fought them for decades, and now they are here," he grunted. He knew his face would be all over the social media within minutes. He knew his boss would see it. He knew his world was about to change in ways he could not predict. He also knew that no one would do anything about them. They came to town as refugees or wealthy settlers, but they did not become part of the community. Instead, they walled off sections of the city, and they took over everything. Now, they were out at night. "Russian pig," barked the voice from behind him. He whirled and spread his arms over Sasha behind him on the sidewalk. They were alone now on the dark sidewalk in front of the closed street shops. The crowd had stayed in the light of the shopping lobby of the Tinkoff Club. There were four of them, plus the bleeding victim of his quick reactions. He felt exhausted now. The rush had left him, leaving only the numbing effects of the best Russian vodka. "Come back to play, Daesh," said Boris, standing firm. "You think you are going home to sleep with your wife, pig?" "Tonight she is sleeping with men," said another of the little gang approaching him. "Which one of you wants to join your friend at the emergency room tonight?" asked Boris coldly. "What is your name, old man?" asked the man. "Death to you," answered Boris. "My name is Death." "Now the judgment comes on you, Russians," said the man with the bleeding face. They began walking toward Boris and Sasha. Suddenly, from behind Boris, on the one-way street beside him was a hunk. He looked around, and the cab was just pulling up to the curb. The cab driver stopped the car and rolled down his window. He leaned out of the window and shouted something in Farsi. The men stopped, approaching with a startled look on their face. Two of them turned and ran, while the others grabbed the man with the bleeding face to stop him. "Next time you see me, we'll be on your way to hell," said Boris. He opened the rear door of the cab and motioned for Sasha to get in and slide over. He slid in beside her, never taking his eyes off the three men standing on the sidewalk, and closed the door. The driver shouted something short and shook the back of his open hand at the men and hit the accelerator. Sasha was still sniffling with trauma as they arrived home. Boris tried to give the man another 500-ruble notes, but he refused to take them. "You owe me nothing, sir," he said. "I think you saved us back there." "Let me show my gratitude," said Boris, holding the notes over the back of the front seat. "I know those men. They are from Syria, but they are Pakistani. They make trouble in my neighborhood since they have been here, and they are not alone, with more coming every month. "You have paid me already for tonight," he said in a light Persian accent. "Thank you again. Be safe yourself," said Boris. He opened the door and got out to help Sasha onto the sidewalk in front of their apartment. Instinctively, he looked around to make sure no one was looking at them or had followed them. He closed the door of the cab and said, "Come, my queen. Let me take you to bed and hold you tight." "Oh, Boris, that was horrible. I have danced with you in a den of corruption for my whole life, but that was pure evil. Who were they? Why did they do that? Why were there no police to arrest them? Why did nobody help us?" She sobbed openly now, releasing all her emotion onto his chest as she folded up in his arms. "It appears the front line has moved to Almaty," said Boris. "Don't worry. Someone will do something. Let's go upstairs and have some cognac."